Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to the Locked On Pistons. You can follow us on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter at DanFeldmanNBA. Want to get into a couple things about the team, and then we have a little bit of something different to close out the show today. First off, I'm guessing a lot of you have seen it already. There's sort of a funny quote from Greg Popovich about how he had to explain to Boban Marjanovic that $21 million is more than $3 million, and he should sign the Pistons' offer sheet. Take it and go. And I think some people, I'm hoping not most people, I think some people took that a little bit more literally than I think Pop intended it. I was there when he said it. I took it as a joking thing. I don't think Boban Marjanovic, as cartoonish of a character as he's often made out to be because of his size and style of play, I don't think he needs help figuring out what's more, $21 million or $3 million. And I have a hard time believing he would have considered staying in San Antonio for that much less. I think this was just sort of Popovich's way of paying Marjanovic a compliment, of saying he's loyal and so focused on basketball that trivial, quote-unquote trivial things like money don't really get on his mind. One other thing Popovich said that I think was more honest, and then also meant to be a compliment right there, was that, you know, Marjanovic came to the United States from Europe and did not have family in San Antonio. So that meant he spent a lot of extra time in the gym before and after practice, which is a stereotype you hear a lot, not necessarily about foreign players, but just all players, that, you know, the guy who's first there, last to leave, you know, you hear that over and over, and you don't know exactly when it's true, and we still don't know whether that's exactly true for Marjanovic, but Popovich did elaborate on it to the point where it's like, oh no, he didn't just come in early and, you know, do some light work, like, he was really at it, and that shows. I mean, he's a player who's improved a lot throughout his career. If you followed him at all from overseas, you know, he had some high expectations earlier in his career, did not live up to them. They were probably unfairly high, and he sort of went back down a level and then had worked his way back up all the way to the NBA. So he earned this bigger contract from the Pistons. And for those of you who took Popovich's comments as lighthearted and intended just to be a compliment while twisting the story a little bit, I think you're on the right track. For the few of you who took it literally, I don't think so. I don't know for sure. I don't know what was in Marjanovic's mind and exactly his conversations with Popovich, but I really don't think it was a literal thing. Another thing that I'm not sure the exact degree of how literal it is, but there's definitely something to this. Stan Van Gundy in a recent practice said that the Pistons could not dribble, with a couple exceptions of you could dribble if you're running a pick and roll, and you could dribble if it was part of a move to, you know, a dribble handoff, something like that, a pass like that. He did not want his players putting down their heads and driving. And I think that's a really cool and effective way to practice, because that's what the Pistons' problem has been. They've, you know, gotten into their offense, maybe run one part of the set, you know, an initial pick and roll. And if that doesn't work, whoever has the ball, it kind of devolves into, you know, just what they can create. A lot of times, at least when they've been in the games, it's been Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris. And that's not all too uncommon from what we saw from the team last year. I think both of those players would be served by this type of practice strategy, because I think they are, especially Tobias Harris, better passers than they take advantage of. And the times they use that skill, they've looked pretty good at it. So I think this could help both of them. And yes, they both have the ability to put the ball on the floor and create, but you don't need to do that on your own unless the shot clock is late. There's too much of a tendency to get into it early. And the reason this has become more of a priority is because Reggie Jackson is out. When Reggie Jackson was healthy, the Pistons ran their offense in a similar way. It was just more effective with Reggie Jackson dribbling. Now that you have Ish Smith in there and he's the one dribbling a little too much sometimes, it's not as effective. So there's more of an onus on quality side-to-side ball movement, you know, across multiple positions. So I do think this is an effective thing and one that will, a method that will serve the Pistons well. I don't know how long Van Gundy kept that rule, no dribbling rule up, but I do think it's a nice, creative, and smart way to coach. We also today are going to take a bigger look, a widespread look at the Pistons. I recorded a segment for Locked On NBA. It's also part of the Locked On Network. It's the national show hosted by David Locke. I highly recommend it, especially this week and next. There are four shows where you're going to hear the Pistons segment in a minute, but there are four shows where he has segments on each team from each Locked On Network host. And then David Locke talks about the team, including the Pistons. So if you check out the episode with the Pistons, you can get David Locke's thoughts on the team in addition to what I think is just a really nice overview of everybody in the league. We're, you know, getting through the preseason, coming into the regular season, and you want to know what's happening around the league. You want to be caught up, and, you know, some people are more into it nationally and have followed everything throughout the summer and training camp. And this will give you some more info. I mean, these are experts on their teams weighing in, but it's also for anybody who's not looking outside of Detroit yet. This is how you get caught up. This is how you get ready for the season and know what you're talking about and have a good sense of what's going on around the league. So here's the segment on the Pistons. And then after that, I recommend you check out all the rest of them. We're going to go through six questions just to preview the season for the Pistons. Number one, what are the two main storylines to the Pistons season? Number one, can they win a playoff game? The Pistons haven't won a playoff game since 2008. They've only made two postseasons since then and were swept by the Cavaliers in the first round both times. So this would be a big breakthrough. Their goals are a little higher to win a playoff series or two, but even winning just one game, that'd be at least a sign of progress, a real show that they're competitive. They tried to make it sound like they were competitive last year while getting swept by the Cavs, and to a certain degree they were, but nothing really puts that together like a real postseason win. And then the other is, can Andre Drummond make the leap? He's got star potential, and he was a first-time All-Star last year, and in a lot of ways is a star. But can he make the leap into that next level of star where the team can depend even more on him? The biggest area that everybody's going to look at, of course, is free throws. He's an awful free-throw shooter. So many of the hacker rule discussions were based around him, and there's going to be a spotlight on him there, but that's not the only thing. A far more important aspect is, can he make this next step defensively? Can he cover up for his teammates? Can he look like a all-defensive team player or somebody who deserves real consideration for that? Question number two, what is the biggest unknown? The biggest unknown is how the team will play and win while Reggie Jackson is hurt. Jackson is expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks to start the season with a knee injury, and that leaves the Pistons with Ish Smith starting and either Lorenzo Brown and Ray McCallum coming off the bench. If that doesn't sound ideal to you, it's because it's not. It's going to put the Pistons in a hole early, but the big question is how much of one? Can the Pistons win enough where once Jackson gets healthy, then they can rally to make the playoffs, get a better seed, you know, whatever the situation is going to be at that point. But the key is for these first 15 to 20 games or so is staying in the race, staying competitive enough where the hole is not too deep. Question number three, which player is most likely to be thought of differently at the end of the season? And I think it's going to be Reggie Jackson, because either he's going to come back and lift the team and improve everything and you know, I think he's on the track to being recognized as a better player and being a better player. Part of that is deserving it. And he took some steps last year, and both deserving to be recognized as better and actually being better. And I think he can continue that. So I think that would also get really noticed if the team struggles early and he comes in and saves the day. On the other hand, if he is not ready to take that step, maybe his reputation takes a hit a little bit. There was a lot of criticism of the contract he got last summer. Doesn't look so bad now because of the escalating salary cap, but I do think there's some residual sentiment that, hey, this is an overpaid player, an overrated player. So if he comes in and does not turn the team's fortunes, I think that would continue and even intensify. Question number four. What would need to happen to make this season great? And I think it's two big things. The number one is Andre Drummond taking steps defensively to where, like I said, he can be that all defensive team type of player, at least in the discussion for it, because the Pistons only have, you know, one good defender behind him, and that's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So if Drummond takes that next step, improves his awareness, improves his recognition, improves his timing, improves his understanding of coverages, that could make a lot of difference and allow the Pistons to put better offensive players on the floor and keep them on the floor and have Drummond clean up for their mistakes behind them. I think he has all the tools to do it. He's continued to make progress toward it during his career. And, you know, he's on the right track. The question is, will he continue to be in, and how far up can he go? The other one is, do the Pistons streaky shooters, and they have a lot of streaky shooters from Reggie Jackson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, can they knock down their open shots? There's a lot of value points there. There's a lot of value in floor spacing with that. So you hope to see, if you're the Pistons, a level of consistency from them, similar to last year, not a drop-off, so that wasn't a fluke. What would happen for this season to derail? And yes, the Reggie Jackson injury stings, but I would say the injury the Pistons cannot afford is to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, because like I said, he is their dependable perimeter defender. They use him to defend a lot of point guards, to ease the burden on Reggie Jackson. And for the time being, I'm guessing they'll do something similar with Ish Smith, though Ish Smith's size being much smaller than Reggie Jackson makes it harder to flip where he's guarding some shooting guards, but sometimes the priority is just guarding a point guard. And so, you know, you have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope able to do that. And then on the offensive end, he provides a lot of value as a floor spacer. I don't think there's anybody else in the roster who can duplicate him in both of those ways. And there's also, as versatile as the Pistons are, there aren't really players who are in the rotation right now who could slide comfortably to shooting guard. Stanley Johnson could do it a little bit, but the probably more realistic option would be bringing up Darren Hilliard or Reggie Bullock from out of the rotation, where most other injuries, at least beyond the Reggie Jackson one that's already happened, with most other injuries, the Pistons are so versatile in the front court that they could move guys around, slide guys up or down, and just take care of it by having really good players remaining on the court. And then lastly, the sixth and final question. What is the most likely scenario for the Pistons this season? Before the year, I thought they were going to get the number four seed. It's kind of up for grabs behind the Cavaliers, Celtics, and Raptors on paper, at least in the Eastern Conference. I thought the Pistons would lead that pack. The Reggie Jackson injury obviously is a detriment to that. So now most likely case is probably a lower playoff seed being competitive in a first round series without home court advantage. And whether they win that or not probably just depends on the matchup and the timing of it. But this is a team that most likely should have a competitive first round series, could go either way. So that's it for the Pistons. You can check out Locked On Pistons on Audio Boomer iTunes. Thank you.